This is episode number 170 with Rebecca Lewis Pankratz. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer, and my mission in life is to help school administrators fight isolation and frustration via a leadership community in order to gain clarity and find solutions to their greatest challenges. I'm also the host of this podcast, where each week I share my conversation with top leaders from across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show, I talk with Rebecca Lewis Pankratz, and we explore a number of interesting topics like Rebecca's remarkable story of escaping poverty, the power of disarming and empowering, creating welcoming environments for all, and how to crush parent-teacher conferences. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I would like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. A lot of school leaders talk about improving students' soft skills to help them succeed in their rigorous coursework. The problem is that most leaders just talk about it without actually doing anything. You can improve your students' non-cognitive skills today by checking out an amazing program called Organized Binder. Learn more at organizedbinder.com. Students who participate in the Conrad Challenge don't learn to think outside the box. There is no box. Learn how innovation takes off and soars beyond the confines of a box at conradchallenge.org.
Hey, y'all. I'm Casey Bell of the Google Teacher Tribe podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts. Make sure you check out all the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com and get ready because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Well, hey there, better leaders. I am excited today to connect with a new friend, Rebecca Lewis Pankratz. And she was introduced to me through Kelly Begley McCall, who recorded a really fun episode here, and hashtag moms as principals, hashtag principals in action. And Kelly, if you're listening, thank you so much for this awesome introduction. I'm absolutely certain this will be a very meaningful episode for the listeners. So in terms of Rebecca's bio, Rebecca fights poverty. She has walked with dozens of families as they made it completely out of poverty. She sees poverty as the main driver for most social problems, so let's get people out of poverty. She works with kids, parents, educators, and communities to do just that. Trauma-informed and restorative justice principles are the tool belt. Changed mindsets become the toolbox, and relationships are the playground for taking this age-old dilemma and turning it into a winnable game. Rebecca, thanks for joining me on the show.
Danny, I'm so excited to be here.
Perfect. Hey, well, speaking of perfect, describe your perfect day at work.
My perfect day at work is when I get to go and invent and dig in with people and sit around tables and vision for what could we do better? What are we missing and what could we do better? And then, of course, getting to connect with students. I really love to elevate students as leaders. I get kind of stifled if it's too many adults sitting around talking about how to make education better. I love to go to the kids and say, what are we missing and what do we need to know and what do you guys need from us? And just watch that shape and form and letting them drive us. So I guess my perfect day at work, Danny, is, well, it looks like all kinds of different things and it's usually not on script.
Yeah, so you got to roll with the punches and do a little improv to be successful in your line of work. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. And that's what makes it fun.
Absolutely. Any tips for the listeners in terms of flexibility? I think that great leaders are definitely more flexible than they are rigid, although there's some things that they need to be tight, quote unquote, tight around. But I'm just curious what works for you since you have a role in a profession where there's a lot coming at you and you have to change directions quite frequently. So how do you build that into your character, that flexibility?
I spend some time with meditation and that really helps me show up and be willing to be present with what comes at me. And you know, if it's a kid that's having a bad day and it just means let's sit down and connect and put that to-do list off, as an administrator, as someone that gets to be in leadership, the other animal that I have to watch out for is knowing that the to-do list will always be there and it's okay to put it away sometimes.
Yes.
And so I think that, you know, speaking to other leaders, like I need to hear that from people. I need to hear Rebecca's stop the emails, Rebecca, go home, be with your family, because this work can consume us because there's always a great need. And so it's that flexibility between that and realizing I'll probably never get it all done and that's okay.
And is there any way to, like, I guess, shut down the mind then? Because we know that to-do lists will always be there. I think us leaders operate in an optimal sense. And so they can shut it off. They know, okay, tomorrow I'll get to these other rocks and this type of thing. But I'm just curious how you might deal with that.
it's a pretty intentional deal for me. And I can't say that I always do it well. And if I get into a snowball emotionally, then I can't shut it off, Danny. And then it gets messy, right? And so, you know, just being vulnerable with you, I can think of several instances in the last year where I kind of got stuck, where I couldn't unplug. And so I think for me, making sure that I'm talking to somebody about that, making sure that I've got a partner that understands the way I operate and can reach out to me and say, hey, I'm worried about you. Mm-hmm. And so that's a really important piece, because I think that I love the word co-regulation, co-care, just co anything. Because for me, if it's left up to me, I can be my own worst enemy, right?
Oh, me too. Yeah.
And so I need people looking out for me. That's a really good conversation to be having that I think leaders need to have more often. And meditation is just, you know, that little piece for me. It's just a few minutes every night, Danny, before I go to bed, where I really intentionally clear my brain and just connect to get that white space. And that seems to give me a better sense of calm during the day. And I don't let anxiety rule my life like that. That was a practice I figured out about 6 years ago that was really a game changer.
What does that look like for you? Are you reading books to learn how to do that? Are you using an app? Is it just completely unguided at this point? You know, you're good to just jump into it?
Yeah. So it was clumsy and it took me about 3 months to figure it out unguided on my own. I didn't have any. I didn't know back then to find an app or to even look on the internet. But one of the ways that I really figured that out in the beginning was I just would imagine water with all this trash on it. And the trash was all the clutter in my life. And I would just start pushing back the trash until the water became clear. And I would just sit in that space for just a few seconds. And now I can do it longer, but it really breeds this deep sense of peace during the daily. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I think the way I've described it too is, you know, you think about like a lake or something, and if there's a strong storm, waves are going to start crashing with the wind and that kind of stuff. And the water will breach the surface. And you definitely can't see to the bottom of the lake. And normally it's a clear lake. But once that storm passes, right, then everything restores the balance, the calm. That was a word that you used. You could see down to the bottom again. So that's sort of like the visual that I want in my life. So when that storm approaches, you can get the calm back. And to be quite honest, if people don't know this about me already, the last thing I'll say, we'll get back to you. But the reason I named myself Sunshine is because of that, right? Clouds and storms and challenges and just terrible, yucky stuff's gonna, it's guaranteed, it's gonna happen to you, right? But are you gonna have a mindset of abundance or scarcity? Are you gonna think that the storm is always there following me around? Or just like the weather that we experience every single day, the clouds do go away, the storm breaks, and the sunshine comes back.
I really love that. Just keeping our focus on the fact that we can be in the middle of tribulations, but they don't have to be our normal. Yeah.
For sure. And thanks for giving me the space to share that quick little story.
Yeah.
Hey, you mentioned a community, and I'm wondering how formal or informal that is, right? So when you do get out of balance, right, and you're having a hard time shutting it off and stuff, and you're reaching out to people, is this a formal group you're a part of? Are these just trusted confidants? What does that look like in your life?
Yeah. So I believe in the power of people and relationships. I wouldn't say that it's a formal group. I would say that it's a couple of folks that I've looked around and said, you know, that piece about that person, that's something I want. And reaching out, and I don't even know if I've said, hey, be my formal mentor, but it's just people, Danny. When people are in a bad space, it usually isn't for me and many I work with, it's usually not self that brings us out of that. It's usually the presence of others that helps us get through the storm or helps us recognize, oh yeah, you're in a mindset where the storm's not going to go away, but it will. What do you need from me to help you get there? And so just those relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. And listeners, you know, definitely look around. There's a really cool book, Leadership Step by Step by Joshua Spodek. And he has all these leadership practices within that book. But one of them actually talks about making a meaningful connection. It's about authentic, deep connections. But the interesting thing is by doing that or another activity called Feed Forward, if you do that with other people, you can find yourself getting some pretty cool mentors just by inviting them using those discussions. And we have the leadership community too, the mastermind. So you could always get more information at betterleadersbetterschools.com/MM if we could help you through any roadblocks or storms you may be facing. So in the pre-chat, you talked about having a very unique and wild story, right? Yeah. And the privilege you have now and getting to do what you do, it's kind of hard to believe that you have that opportunity. And I know that the story connects to community too, which we were just discussing, but I'd love to hear more about just where you've come from, right? And how'd you get to the place you're at?
I love to share this part. It's pretty remarkable. You know, for the listeners out there who might not have heard of ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, I'm going to reference those in my own life. And so, born to a single mom in the 70s, she loved me very much, Danny. We were in the city in California, but she came from a ton of brokenness herself. So on the ACE indicator, 10 is the highest that the indicator goes. And my mom had 9 ACEs growing up. And so, yeah, wow. And the absence of her own community. So young, single mom, me, welfare, things were just messy from 0 to 5. And as around 6 years old, my mom and I moved to a small Kansas community and things got better. But poverty and stress were always pretty profound growing up for me. Grade school was amazing. I ran to the building every day. I had teachers that wrapped support around me. I loved to go. Middle school and my middle class community started. And you know, that's kind of when it dawned on me, Danny, that, oh, I'm poor. I'm not like poor. I'm like really poor. Didn't want other kids to know, didn't want teachers to know, lost that warm connection of grade school. So it didn't take very long before I kind of became that kid behaviorally in the building. Got my first job at 13, waiting tables, working a ton of hours under the table. Moved out when I was 15, rented a trailer house in a small hidden ghetto in my town. 16th birthday came, I called the high school, said I was quitting, quit school. And in my mind, Danny, I was going to go out into the world and take all of my brilliance and find a house like girls had on the other side of town. Mm-hmm. Right about the same time, I fell in love with someone that was 3 years older than me and fresh out of prison, and we left state. So you know what I found? I didn't find a house like girls had on the other side of town. Right. I found survival. From age 15 to age 29 was my own horror story and a marriage full of abuse, addictions. At age 29, I finally had the courage to leave that marriage and stay gone. And so I was homeless, high school dropout, no car, no job, no money, and pregnant with my first baby. Had no idea how to be a mom. Mm. So I knew I had to do something different than what was done for me. So I enrolled in college full-time and went back to work full-time, and my new baby cried full-time. So fast forward, Danny, a decade later, 2 more little boys, and I was back in the same Midwest community I started out in, and I bought a trailer house in the same hidden ghetto that I started out in for $1,000. And the trailer should have been condemned. So holes in the floor, windows broke out. I mean, just the worst thing you can imagine right in your mind. That was it, right? Mm. 7 months clean and sober, still in college, trying to get a 4-year degree to be a high school art teacher and working nights as a bartender at a bowling alley. And just every single day, Danny, I'd run as fast as I could run, but poverty, the bone crushing weight of poverty and chaos and survival, you know, it's just pressing against me. I bumped up against a poverty project by accident. So I got this invitation to come to this project to help me get out of poverty. And, you know, Danny, I was terrified because I had 3 little boys that I couldn't take in public because their behaviors were so difficult. I didn't know how to manage them. Later, mm-hmm. my oldest son and my youngest son got diagnosed with autism. I'm from the trailer park. I have 3 kids by 3 different dads. I've got all these addictions in my background. I'm just a mess. And, you know, here's this invitation to go to this poverty project with all these middle-class people, right? I was terrified. Right.
Yeah.
And I showed up the first night and me and my kids walked through the door. There's 50 people in a gymnasium, and these women came over and scooped up my little boys and just acted like they weren't running amok. And they told me and about 8 other moms, they said, come on, come this way. And they took us in a room and they sat us down and they said, look, here's the deal. We see families struggling in our community and we think poverty is the root cause of it and we want to solve it. And we need people like you who are living it to tell us how to do it. So instantly, Danny, they disarmed me and they empowered me. You know, that phrase right there on that night, I didn't know it yet, but that phrase right there changed my life. Fast forward a little bit, I ended up going to work for that poverty project. I ended up getting to build it with a team of people into the largest and most successful poverty project like that in the country, getting more people completely out of generational poverty than anyone had ever done, including myself and my mom. My mom made it out of poverty at 59 years old. So to just give you some numbers, Danny, in the 5 years that I was there, we had 119 people complete the initial phase 1 of the process. Out of that 119 people, 76 stayed for the 2 to 5 year process. And so far, out of those 76 people, 41 adults bringing 40 plus kids have made it completely out of poverty, mostly generational. So if you combine the income of those 40 some adults when they first came into the process, as around just under $500,000 a year. So most families making $10,000 to $15,000 a year or no income. Right. And now we have families that are making $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $90,000, $120,000 a year.
Homeowners, everything. Yeah.
Changing everything. Kids getting off of medicine, kids getting off of IEPs, just powerful stuff. But so, and at some point, Danny, teachers became interested in me in my own community because they were watching the transformation. I had the kids that were flipping desks, desks and scratching their face and falling out in class and running out of classrooms. And they were watching our transformation and they knew I worked for this poverty project. And what I figured out along the way, Danny, is that most educators are generationally middle class and they love the kids, but a lot of times they bring their middle class strategies with them to work with these families and they end up feeling kind of like they're beating their heads against a wall. At some point, a company called ESDEC found me and started having me go in and do professional development with school systems around poverty and trauma. A year and a half ago, I left the Poverty Project and went to work for ESDEC full time and became the director over 10 high school completion programs for dropouts. Eight of those in 9 different communities. 8 of those programs, I have adults, but 2 of them, I have students, I have kids, I have teenagers. And one of the other pieces to my work is that everywhere I have one of those high school completion programs, we've started poverty projects in the community to pull the parents in and start working with them as well and bring the middle class alongside of them in this process to start to solve poverty in your local community. So currently I'm working with, I don't know, maybe 60, 70 parents in these different communities. So the community piece and understanding, you know, getting close to these parents and having education get close to these parents in a different way than they've done before, Danny, and having people really get into authentic relationship and sit down and listen to each other and look at each other and go, wow, we want the same thing. Mm-hmm. We want strong communities. We want strong neighborhoods. We want our kids to do well. Because sometimes we have these differences that we can really magnify, but the truer piece to the puzzle is that we have more similarities and more common desires than we do differences. And that's where we can start to build from. So that's what I'm passionate about with parents and families and communities.
I love it. And Rebecca, thank you so much for just being courageous and authentic and sharing that story. It's beautiful. And it's amazing just to hear how many lives, you know, you've impacted, obviously your own and your immediate family, but everybody else through working through the Poverty Project. And just because you said yes too. So, you know, thank you. Thank you for saying yes. I want to go back to the idea of the power of disarming and empowering. I think that was something that you said. And I didn't catch the phrase, at least I didn't write it down in my notes, that phrase that opened you up to saying yes. I'm curious what that was again. And what could we do as schools to then approach, right, our parents and our students to help disarm them and empower them as well?
Danny, that's so important. And because they approached me like that, I've been able to replicate that in so many ways. They sat us down in a room. So these are strong middle-class women. They look middle-class. They, to me back then, they looked like they had it all together, right? And they said, look, we see you guys struggling and we think poverty is the reason you're struggling and we want to solve it. And we need you guys to tell us how to do it. So finally, Danny, at age 37, somebody finally said, hey, we see you. And we hear you and we're with you and we want to know what you need from us and what we can do together versus I think that's just this fatal mistake we make is that we want to fix poor people or we want to fix this population or fix that population, but we haven't taken the time to go get close to them and say, hey, what do you need us to know about what's happening and what do you need from us? And that was just powerful for me, Danny, because I don't have the highest intelligence, but I have some intelligence. And for these, what I considered powerful women to say, hey, what do you think we should do about this? You're the one experiencing this. That was a game changer. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of times there's this mission to solve poverty in education, whether we're claiming it, articulating it or not. I mean, that's what a lot of things are wrapped and wired around. But a lot of times we come at families with solutions, right? And maybe the families don't see what we're offering as a solution to the problems they're trying to solve. So I think we would get a lot further faster if we could authentically ask, hey, what are you dealing with? What are you facing? And how do we solve this together? And that's when we first started this podcast, I alluded to the fact that I love to pull students in and ask them, hey, what do you need us to know? And then what do you need from us? And how can we make that happen? Because you can get so much further down the road with others faster.
You know, the interesting thing, I really want to pull this out for the listeners. So as an educator, I was trained on how to design like rigorous curriculum, make learning authentic and that sort of stuff. And what I stumbled across in the class, but I don't even think I realized that I stumbled across it. But when I asked students for more voice and participation in how we move forward, the class ran better. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I never, you know, I didn't write it down. Okay. It's just something that I sort of stumbled upon and then just put into my classroom practice. Then as a school leader, you learn about like building relationships and you learn that change is hard. It takes a long time and casting a vision, all this kind of stuff. But you don't necessarily learn to ask like, hey, what do you guys think we should do? But as a businessman, when I made the switch, right, and I decided to go all in on myself here, and I'm reading everything, I'm listening to every podcast, watching every video until my eyes fall out of my head. And that's like the foundation of every great business, right? But I'm saying that's probably the foundation of every great school too, is those that know people so well and they ask, how can we serve you? Those are the ones that really, really crush it and excel, right? And have a world-class culture. And it's not thinking that I know what the best podcast is or the mastermind, like this is how we have to do things, or like the one-on-one coaching I do. It's not like, okay, Rebecca, yeah, here's the solution. It's a lot of questions and asking you, what do you think we should do? Oh, and now that I'm on this rant, last thing is that I've learned too, leadership, and you get those surprise conversations, right? That come out of nowhere. You're like, how should I respond? Well, one of the best ways to respond is to hear it. If you need to buy yourself more time, you can ask to revisit that later so you can put more thought into it. But a great way to respond when somebody pops up on you and they ask you whatever, and it doesn't matter if it's a kid, if it's a parent, if it's a staff member, say, well, what do you think we should do? And they're probably going to offer like this really great idea. And now your job as a leader is so easy because if it's aligned with your principles, just do what they just told you to do. It's that simple. It really is.
Yeah. And we want these big, I think sometimes that's it, Danny. We can complicate stuff. And we realize that, you know, I'm really big on shoulder to shoulder projects. We're working shoulder to shoulder with parents, with teachers, with kids, and really cultivating that. We're getting unusual voices to the actionable game. But it is, it's so simple that, hey, you know, who's the smartest person in the room? Well, it's the room, right? Exactly. So, and if you're a leader, sometimes you just hit on something really important, Danny. If you're a leader, sometimes people are coming to you asking you what to do about something and they're signaling that they have an idea. Right? But you haven't created the culture yet where somebody can say, hey, let's try this or let's try that, which you'll get there if you keep fostering ideas and really pulling them apart to put them into action. It's so amazing. And every single human being has these giftings and this brilliance, and these groups have giftings and they have brilliance. And so how do we really expound upon that and pull from that to create what we all want?
Love it. And that quote too, just for listeners, again, you know, the middle class moms were talking to Rebecca and they said, we need you to tell us how to solve it. And so I want all the listeners to take that approach back to their schools. Use that phrase with whatever stakeholder you're working with and say, we need you to tell us how to solve it. And I think at this point, let's pause here real quick for a word from our sponsors. Today's show is proudly sponsored by Organized Binder, a program which gives students daily exposure to goal setting, reflective learning, time and task management, study strategies, organization skills, and more. Organized Binder's color-coded system is implemented by the teacher through parallel process with students, helping them create a predictable and dependable classroom routine. You can learn more and improve your students' executive functioning and non-cognitive skills at organizedbinder.com. All right. And we're back with Rebecca Lewis Pankratz, and we're talking about poverty. And I'm assuming you've been listening to this show, but she just shared an incredibly powerful Genesis story going through her life of escaping poverty. And even a line that I wrote down too is you said you were running as fast as you could, right? But poverty continued to catch up to you. And then there was this group of women that said, we need you to tell us how to solve this problem. And man, so many cool things have happened as a result of that. Rebecca, in the pre-chat, you talked about how your passion is parents now and how that could be a sticky subject for some schools. Because some, to be quite honest, I think they might be a little afraid or uncomfortable, or who knows, they just get a little awkward around folks that might not represent where they're coming from, whether that's a class thing, a gender thing, a culture thing, or whatever. You mentioned too that, you know, your mission is to help schools reinvent themselves as the lighthouse in the community. I love that. That's a beautiful image. You know, it just makes me say, yes, like I so appreciate that. But in terms of the parents, how can we be more open to them, more receptive, or create a culture that's more welcoming and inviting?
You know, Danny, I think too, again, schools look for these big initiatives or they look for these models. And I tell them, I'm like, guys, we don't need this big silver bullet. It really comes in the BBs. And the BBs is every time the secretary answers the phone, every time a parent walks in your building, we're learning with the trauma-informed, trauma-responsive framework about the power of oxytocin to always counter cortisol. Well, oxytocin is when I light up when I see you. Like, I see you and I light up and I'm glad you're with me. And, you know, seeing parents at ball games and saying hi to them, sitting with them at a ball game if you don't know them, when they're getting in there to enroll their kids and they're scared or kids are acting a little off, you know, it's being with people, Danny, and there is so much power in just doing these little connection pieces to transform school culture. And again, I do some of this in the training that I do, but helping teachers to really understand the way that first parent teacher conference rolls out, I'm like, look, guys, and they're like, well, don't we need to tell them all the things that Johnny is not doing well? And I'm like, if Johnny's not doing well in October, chances are he's not going to be doing well. Let's use the first meeting with parents to build a relationship. And you can see the teachers, like, they just kind of relax at that point because they feel pressure. And some parents do. They want to know their kids' academics and they want to know their kids' behaviors. But sometimes if you've got a parent coming out of a lot of chaos, a lot of trauma, they just need to first know they're safe and that you love their kid. And, you know, so how do we set those meetings up with parents to where the parents walk away going, wow, that is very different than anything I've encountered with education. Parents have baggage about teachers. Teachers have baggage about parents. And again, if we can get to that common thing of connection, Danny, we can change games from the inside out. So no agendas, right? Connect first. Agendas come later and they're reciprocal. So parents have agendas, teachers have agendas. But if we have that relationship, we can get to both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, you don't have to recreate the wheel and it's not necessarily rocket science. But in some aspects, you know, Rebecca, I think what you're saying is absolutely paradigm shifting because people think the parent-teacher conference, you know, it has to be that, you know, here's the progress of the kid. Here's the behavior, you know, thank you to parent of the good student that doesn't cause a ruckus.
Yeah, right.
And those that is a challenge, you know, okay, well, help me. Like, what's wrong with you? You know, that type of thing. That's what, you don't say that, but that's what gets communicated. And just by getting to know the parents, like literally just having some human to human communication with questions and listening and being a reflective listener starts off that process. You build up that relational capital. And then when you have to make a tough call or whatever, it comes up so much easier. I love what you shared too, because it's disarming for the teacher that they're not gearing up for this potentially hectic conversation that they have to have. And then like you mentioned at the ball game or whatever, just all these small little touch points. In my own leadership practice, now with Better Leaders, I do the weekend resource every Sunday, just a bunch of resources like articles and videos. And there's always a quote that I like to ponder. And when I did that actually as a principal too, and you wouldn't believe how many positive responses I got from that stuff. Not necessarily like, hey, look, we won this award or whatever. And people wanted to celebrate that and they liked it. But I got so much receptivity and engagement from just saying, hey, here's some books I'm reading right now. And they're not related to school, you know? Or here's a quote that I think is interesting. My parents love that. And so bring that sort of just connecting as human beings to the conferences.
I think if we can get away from our business as who we are or our school as who we are, and we can go back to the community is who we are. And we have all these pieces in it and we all play roles and sometimes our roles intertwine, but really it's the community and we all need each other and everybody here is important. There's, at least in America, there's just been more and more reported feelings of disconnection. Mm. And in the trauma responsive work and all the research that we look at and the resilience building practices, we are learning now that we have got to become conveners of connection. We have to intentionally create the connection. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what's going to save us. And there's many different reasons for how we got here. And that isn't the point at this point, Danny. The point is that we all need each other. And every population has value.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, if you're in the business of school, you're going to interface with all different types of people. And we want to make sure that well-being, that, you know, before student success has to come student well-being, before teachers can be successful teachers, they have to be well. And, you know, that's a whole nother podcast, Danny, but we don't ever talk about putting good equipment on teachers to take care of their well-being. We've been talking about that in social work, in the medical profession, about vicarious trauma and self-care, but our teachers are no longer just teachers. They are doing social work and sometimes family intervention. And I mean, all these different things. But when I ask teachers about self-care, do you know what they say to me, Danny?
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I did blank.
June. I'm like, what does self-care look like for you? And they're all like, June. You know, helping schools to start thinking through, how do we bake these better systems for our helpers? Because you have a bunch of hurting kids and families, you're going to have hurting teachers, right? Mm-hmm. And so, that's another podcast, like I said.
Yeah, we'll create that one too. Hey, Rebecca, what's one book, video, tool, or some type of resource that's really impacted your leadership, productivity, or quality of life in the last year?
you know, The Deepest Well by Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris is pretty new, but I read that in a weekend and I would highly recommend that for all humans. Doesn't matter where you're coming from. Harvard Institute for Developing Child is how I really started to understand the effects of poverty and trauma on the brain. So Harvard Institute for Developing Child, they've got a ton of resources and little vignettes you can watch, Danny, to start cueing people in on the science of ACEs. And then of course, Jim Sporleader, documentary Paper Tigers. I've got to do a lot. So the documentary Paper Tigers is available on Amazon now for, I think, $12. It's powerful, powerful documentary. It'll change the way you look at kids and school. And he also has a book, How to Implement a Trauma-Informed School, The Administrator's Guide, which is, I read that in a weekend too. It's a workbook, but it's so brilliantly laid out. And so Jim Sporleader, if you can find him on Twitter, I think it's at Sporlin, S-P-O-R-L-I-N. He is an incredible human that's helping us push the trauma responsive work down here on the ground.
Awesome. And, you know, listeners, we'll have that linked up for you in the show notes. So Deepest Well, Paper Tigers, and How to Implement a Trauma-Informed School. We'll get all those links for you. Well, Rebecca, you've been an amazing guest, but I can't let you escape before asking you the doozy of the question every guest gets at the end, which is, you're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by any resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
We actually, one of the schools I have with students this year, we were approached by the district to build this dream school for kids that struggle in the traditional setting. Mm-hmm. So we've actually been building the dream school for the last 3 months. I think all of us are feeling a little bit, because it's time for kids now. So we went in and we ripped down all the signs that say no cell phones. We got rid of the desks. I mean, these are high school kids, right? And we've got some projects to onboard them on. But then, Danny, really, when we get these kids in here in a new way, guess what we're going to ask first thing? What do you guys want this school to look like? We're having our kids, we're taking kids to conferences. They're doing mini keynotes. You've got kids that want to present. You've got kids that want to do podcasts. You've got kids that want to do vlogs. You've got kids that want to write. So really, Danny, it's a mess is what my dream school looks like. It is a mess and it's noisy and there's stuff happening everywhere and nobody really knows what's coming next. But learning is happening at an exponential rate, and kids, they don't want to go home at night. They run to the building in the morning and they become powerful and their confidence is built and they realize that they are going to, and they will, and are going to contribute to society in a powerful way. You know, the three biggest things for me in a school like that is that it's really passion-based, and we hear that a lot, but really, truly, it is helping these kids who've been told a lot of yucky messages from themselves and from society and however, helping them figure out what they love to do and what makes them want to get up in the morning, and then just magnifying that, amplifying that, and having kids shoulder to shoulder with us and learning from the kids. You know, that's another top priority for me. And then really helping kids understand their own background. If it's poverty, if it's trauma, if it's just this amazing background, and how they can use that background to push them forward and to help heal society, no matter what the background looks like. So those three things are really important to me.
It's beautiful. And I so appreciate it. It's cool that you're actually doing this work right now.
And we're doing that. Yeah.
Well, Rebecca, thank you so, so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at Poverty Edge. So P-O-V-E-R-T-E-D-G-E. I'm on Facebook at Rebecca Lewis Pankratz. I think I'm the only Rebecca Lewis Pankratz in the world, so you should have an easy time finding me. Email Rebecca L at esdac.org. Danny, you can put that in the notes too. We've got a cool conference coming up in Kansas, Danny, movingtheneedle.esdac.org, about poverty and trauma. We'll have kids presenting there, teenagers presenting there, which is so powerful for teachers. So yeah, find me. Let's do this thing together. Figure out where we go.
Absolutely. And Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember, life's 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Danny and Rebecca. Head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Rebecca in the search bar. Show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of the episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Rebecca, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thanks, Danny.
All right, Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. I created a new resource for you called The 3 Leadership Questions I Ask Every Day. You can download the resource by visiting betterleadersbetterschools.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. This helps me in a few ways. It gives the show some social proof. It encourages new people to listen to the show, and it improves the ranking of the show and therefore helps me serve more school leaders. If you want extra credit and some good vibes, share your biggest takeaway from the show and tag me on Twitter and Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. And make sure to use the hashtag BLBS. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Join over 3,000 school leaders that get this resource delivered every week. In the weekend resource, I share content curated specifically for school leaders. You'll get articles, videos, templates, and exercises, coaching tips, inspirational quotes, invitations to free Friday group coaching, which is an exclusive offer made available only to newsletter subscribers in the Better Leaders, Better Schools tribe, and links to all the content I created for you this past week. You can subscribe at betterleadersbetterschools.com/weekend-resource. And remember, life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader.